Hello, everybody. How are you? Welcome to the show. I'm Tom McCaffrey. I'm here with Eric B., LE2B. How's it going? Welcome to, I don't know, it's Easter weekend.
Yeah.
You psyched, Eric?
Well, yesterday was Good Friday. Was it good for you?
You psyched about you guys killing Jesus?
I always say the same thing when they say, did the Jews kill Jesus? I'm like, we didn't kill Jesus, but we didn't help. You know, we're kind of.
Yeah.
It was one of those things, I think.
That's basically you guys' MO, right? You're really helping a lot of. We have a guest here. We have a returning guest. One of our favorites, our favorite comedians. He was a writer for The Tonight Show, Conan O'Brien, Golden Globes, Robert Smigel, Josh Comers. How's it going, man?
You wrote for Josh Comers, too? Holy shit.
Yeah, totally.
That's big.
You're out in L.A. and enjoying the... the fine LA weather and atmosphere.
I'm enjoying the rain. I'm actually disappointed because they said it was going to rain like all day, which we've had a lot of, and now it's stopped raining.
Oh, nice. So before we started, you were talking about how long have you been out in LA? When did you move? Like 2 years ago?
Jeez. Well, you know, my first stint in LA was 2009 to 2016, and then I moved back in 22.
So, and do you, all right, so I lived in LA a couple of times. How do you, and I visit there every now and then. And I was saying just some, you know, a lot of people that like when I go there now, it's just, there's some like kind of like, there's like a bad energy there. Would you agree with that?
I would say there's, yeah. And it's just, the city is kind of gross now. And there's a lot of characters, unstable people on the streets. And, in fact, we were just driving the other day and it was right on Fairfax. This woman was walking down the street. She was walking on the sidewalk. This unstable looking homeless guy was walking past her, and he basically poked her in the chest. And we're in the car. We couldn't really do anything because he just kept moving. He didn't stop to attack, but it was just like this poor woman. Just is, you know,
yeah.
Dude who's just out of his mind and filthy just comes and just walked by. I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna keep my head down, and it just like pokes her in the chest, and she's just looking at her like shocked, like what, and then kept walking.
Yeah,
like that's like not unusual. Like I wouldn't let my wife walk home from the Grove in the dark. We live like 10 minutes, but like I wouldn't let her do it. I wouldn't
have
do
you,
it.
Have scared. You noticed it? A difference from when you first lived there?
I do see less encampments, but I also, it's not like I go, you know, it's not like I'm driving Uber and see the whole city, you know, in one day. But yeah. there are less.
They but got there, rid of, there's less encampments in front of your house.
Yes, yes. But the homeless still come and, you know, pay us visits and, you know, set fire to abandoned buildings and on our street.
That's nice.
You should come visit. It's really nice.
Well, New York's not guys, too-
I'm sorry. I was gonna say the Olympics are coming, so that'll be all for a little bit.
I was going to say though, there's New York's not so great either.
Yeah,
I don't know if, I've been hearing the story this week about these women really in on TikTok that they're getting punched in the face.
I saw that,
and I think didn't that happen to you at one point?
Yes, it did.
Yeah,
when I was.
That was a woman.
I was a woman. I was dressed as a woman walking in Times Square. But no, yeah, it actually did happen to me. This is I worry that I did. Eric, you have a great memory. You'll tell me if I told this on the podcast before. Did I tell this on the podcast before?
I don't think so. No,
and, you know, I don't think so either.
No one listens to my episodes anyway, so I can tell. I feel safe.
I got to warn you, the gang that punched you are big fans of this podcast. Oh, no. So they might
probably like to, they wouldn't mind a stroll down memory lane. Yeah. Yeah. It's probably one of that guy's greatest punch. Okay. Do you remember there was, this is the caliber of shows I did. Wonder, TGIFs in the basement of TGIFs in Times Square. Eric, you were in with,
well, you know who ran that room, right?
Yeah, Ruben.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I didn't know that show, but I mean.
Yeah, Dave Ruben.
Dave Ruben? Can we do a side talk about him?
Yeah.
Did you know him, Tom? I know.
I feel like I know who that is.
Yeah.
Is he someone? Is he a booker or something?
No, he was a stand-up, and now he's basically a right-wing pundit. But
right.
He gets in with like all of them, like Don Jr., Elon, hanging out with all of them. And I got to say, he is the biggest lightweight you'll ever hear speak about politics or anything else. This guy is mediocre in every fucking field he enters.
Do you mean lightweight in terms of he's not informed?
He's dumb. He's not smart. Like, you just kind of see, like, wait a minute. Okay, some of these right-wing guys, even if they're not making a good case, they have a solid argument that's not, like, just, you know, at least the presentation or
the context or, yeah, like.
I mean, a lot of them don't. But like, he's a guy that presents himself as way smarter than he is because he's not really bright. Like, you'll watch him on Bill Maher or some other shit. And he's just fucking dumb, and I don't like him. So,
and he also is, he's Jewish and he's gay. And he's hanging out with a lot of people who like neither one of those things. And, you know, he tries to justify it to himself somehow. I don't know how he does it,
it helps them too. Like, oh, shit, we got a gay friend.
Yeah.
Did you notice this? I'm sure you have noticed it. I've been seeing it a lot where, there were a lot of comedians who were kind of like floating around for years, you know, to, I don't know, some degree of not really having a lot of success. Mm-hmm. And then when this whole, like, you know, splintering of, you know, Earth One and Earth Two happened, where, you know, the GOP just became a cult and lost its mind.
Yeah.
A lot of them flocked over to the Fox News ecosystem.
Right.
And they've been able to carve out a very good career being kind of these crazy right wing conspiracy nuts. So it's kind of like, you can tell they were like, oh, if I go here and I just kind of like, you know, parrot all the weird things they're saying. And, you know, if I'm on in that cult, they'll give me a career. There's a few people I've watched, and it's really weird because.
I just want to say one thing that a lot of like middle-aged white comics kind of go there. I feel like they feel like there's no place for them in regular society. So they just got to join this cult and it works for them, you know?
And have you noticed a little bit, even on really, really, really high profile comedians, you know, when I listen to them now, there is a feeling of like they surround themselves with people who have to have a certain ideology. And if they don't, they're kind of not really welcome. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like,
of course. It's
not naming, but you know, like Rogan, Rogan kind of has become, he's not the worst of the worst, but whenever they are talking about the really ultra right wing, his name is always thrown in. Yeah. And I've seen some people I know who've gone on there and been embraced, and they'll start, you know, spouting election fraud things.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like,
it's an easy track. It's an easier track. If you go right with your comedy, you have an audience. You're going to have an audience so desperate to hear a comedian, you know, take their side. And, you know, I mean,
but it's weird, right? Because I'll watch people that I knew for years and I'm like, oh, you do. Because you can't just go on some of these shows and just be like, hey, look, I don't want to get involved in this. I'm neutral. I don't really know what happened. Like, that's not going to fly. You have to go on and be like, no, the insurrection wasn't an insurrection. No, it was all rigged. They're all weaponizing the DOJ. And
but
do you
a
think
lot
you
of
could
the,
do that.
And a lot of these comics also say they're not Republican. They go, oh, I'm just independent. But then they'll just, you know, espouse all the fucking Republican talking points. But they go, I'm a comedian. I'm a libertarian.
And they'll get regular spots on the number one late night show, Greg Gutfeld.
I know a lot of comics.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, that's the number one. And I, you know, I know people who do that show. And it's just very like, they're doing it, I guess, because it's a high profile show. But I don't know. I don't think I could go on that show. And I couldn't. I don't think I could do it. And like,
I fault people for so little in trying to get ahead these days because I know how hard it is, you know, to get anywhere, especially now. I feel like, but going on Gutfeld show or going right wing to get.
Well, I know some people who go on there and they like tell me they get so many followers from it, you know.
I mean, there's got to be some true believers, though, too. There's some true believers, but I'm sure there's some calculated.
But back with Ruben, like, he was like that. He was kind of like, he was super liberal. He had a show on Sirius that he was super liberal. And then he saw that's where the winds were blowing. And I just always thought when I used to talk to him, he never liked comics that would do stuff like that. He would tell me that. He would go, oh, this comic's playing to this. They're not really that.
Yeah.
And this was the point where he was not out, you know, he was pretending he was someone. And then he did the same exact thing. So that's always what made me laugh, because he would go, he would say it about certain comics. I see what they're doing. They're just trying to play to this. It's bullshit.
Right.
And he just did it.
And he had a show on Sirius at that time?
That was a little bit after.
How is he entertaining at all? Like, how is this guy entertaining? How does he get there?
It's really funny. Do you ever watch, it's called The Majority Report. It's on YouTube. It's with Sam Cedar. You know Sam Cedar.
Yeah.
And what they do is they just spend most of their time playing clips of right-wing people and ripping into them. And they have a hard-on for Dave Rubin, and they fucking go into it hard. It's so funny. They have this guy also now. It's almost like he calls up and pretends he's Dave. He does a perfect Dave Rubin impression, which is basically, it's doing like a Bullwinkle. That's basically Dave Rubin. You should watch it. It's just so fun. What they
do. Gay Republican. I'm a gay Republican. I hang out with Don Jr. And
yeah. He goes, oh, no, I'm not. I'm not.
If he'd like, I'd suck his dick. You know.
Come on.
He's like, I'm a classical liberal. That's how he started. He wasn't a conservative. He was a classical liberal, which I never understood what the hell that meant. Yeah. That means be a Republican.
He really was? He touted himself as a liberal?
No. He first was a liberal. Then he said he did this viral video, like right when Trump was elected, that he was leaving the left. But he said he didn't say he was a Republican. He just said he was a classical liberal, which is, I don't know what the hell that means. And then he was just really a Republican. And then he got went viral because people love that. Republicans love it when you come from the dark side and you come to us.
Yeah. Right.
They love that shit.
Right.
Eric, you're like a smart, informed political guy, right? Yeah. Like, and when you talk politics with him, if you ever did, it sounds like you did. Like, were you ever like, no, you don't really know what you're talking about? Was it apparent to you, or did he say it? Or did you just scratching surfaces? Because I never talked politics with him.
I remember him being liberal. I also remember he was a very pro-Israel guy, which he still is. You know, I know the type. You know, like I'm not saying I'm anti-Israel, but like, you know, the type, the Jewish people who are like, they do no wrong. There's no fault.
But it's also like that. You know, if he's on the right now, that's the
right
opinion.
Default position. But I actually want. Let's get back to him. Your story, though, because
I want to get back to your story, because I do remember when this happened, because I before you go into it, I remember you had like a bruise on your face, and I must have been the 500th person to ask you about it, and by the time I asked you, you were like, I'm not telling this story anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're just like, look, or I might have been near someone asking you, and you were like, I'm not telling this anymore, because, you know, it was like you had just gotten through like a 10-day press event for like, you know, answering questions about your new movie, Batman, you know, like, so what was it like playing Batman? You know, let's see. So what happened?
What was it like getting punched in the face? So I was at that show at the TGIF Friday.
What year was this?
This was probably 2000, early 2000, 2003, maybe. I'm thinking, because I had just gotten a job in advertising. I remember because I had to go, you know, in there with a black eye. I was copywriting. Got this new job, and all of a sudden, this guy's showing up. Who they hired me because it was just a comic.
We're like, we got to hire this guy, man. This guy's ear to the streets.
Yeah, right. We needed more man on the street things with him. Getting punched in the face. So yeah. Anyway, I was in the doing that show, and it was the worst night of comedy in my life. I think it was just so bad. There was women in the front row, like everyone was dying, and it was painful deaths. It wasn't.
I got to say that statement. They were painful. You saying that was the worst night of comedy in your life. People don't realize saying that is like, I can't even imagine how bad a night that would have been. I mean, the bad nights in comedy.
When it ends with you getting assaulted, it's pretty bad.
Okay, all right. So, yeah. So,
yeah. So, in fact, I remember this group of women were so obnoxious, and I don't even know why they were there. One of them put her feet up on the stage, like just kick back and put them up on the stage. And I remember, because this is not something that I do. I was so disgusted and so fucking angry. I called them all the C word.
Oh.
And
wow.
But it was par for the course. It didn't seem out of the norm.
When you said that, how did that go over? Did that? Did they even react?
I don't even remember. But I don't think it made a difference because it was, like I said, it was it felt normal in the circumstances. It didn't seem out of
place. And I'm sure they were used to that.
Yeah, and I'm not used to saying that on stage. So I went off, and I remember just being so beaten down and angry too at the show. And I watched I stuck around for a couple more comics just so I want to see if, you know, what other people did. And yeah. And most people died. This guy, remember Josh Spear?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. He's out in LA with you.
Oh, is he? Okay.
That's comic move. I remember I'd always do that. If you had a bad set, you'd stick around for the next couple of people to make sure they did bad.
No. Also, I mean, I run shows all the time, and anytime I see a really good comic in the room after they go on, I'm like, that guy probably didn't do well, because you're either wishing that everyone else bombs, or you're like, or maybe you're just wondering if the show's just fucked up.
Yeah,
you know, it only really be good comics because they care a lot, you know. So
yeah,
new comics.
If people that suck are doing as well as me after or before, I'm like,
it's the worst.
This audience sucks. So anyway, but basically it was horrible for everybody. So I'm like, all right, I'm getting the fuck out of here. And I was living with Mike Singer at the time. I know Bronstein, you know, and he was emceeing the show. So I walk down. I lived in Astoria at the time. Mike was actually the MC was my roommate. And I was going toward the N train uptown, right under the Lehman Brothers building. That's where I had to go for my train. The N train. And I remember now, like, afterwards, but it wouldn't meant anything to me. There was a guy there's like these two columns, and there was this, you know, pretty big Latino guy, like just kind of like with his hands kind of in his, I don't know, in his pocket or something. And he was kind of just like standing there, kind of like bouncing the head, not like crazy, just nothing noticeable. And I just started to walk by him, and, next thing I know, I was on the ground. This guy slugged me hard, and I went down. But later on, I got the footage from Lehman Brothers, actually. And I have the video of me walk, but you don't see the punch. You see me walking off screen and then falling back into the screen. And then to my credit, I get up pretty quickly, and I'm just rubbing my face and looking. And what was happening is the guy was running down the street, 49th or 47th, 49th, I think, the opposite direction away from Times Square, east. And there was these kids like on a crate, like sitting on crates. They were just around, who were like, dude, you gotta go get him, man. You gotta go get him. I'm like, well, so to get punched again? So I was like, all right, do I call? Cause my face was just like, I mean, it was just throbbing. And I was like, all right, what do I do now? So I decided I'm going to call the cops. They're not going to find this guy, but I want to, you know, it'll be another number to show Times Square isn't safe. You think Times Square is Disneyfied? Well, this doesn't happen in places that are Disneyfied. And so the cops drove me around the block a few times. It was total bullshit. Then they wind up pulling up finally, because, you know, of course we didn't find them. They wind up, I was in the back of the cop car, by the way, with them. And we wind up pulling up like a block away from the TGF Fridays. And supposedly they were writing a report, which I found out they never did. Mm-hmm. And I told I called my roommate, Mike, the MC. I said, dude, I got punched in the face. Can you bring me some ice? He's like, all right, when the show lets out. So the show is letting out. So I'm sitting in the back of the cop car. My friend comes out finally. He's like, I didn't have ice. And he hands me a Chipwich. So I'm in the back of the cop car, putting a Chipwich on my side of my face. And then the women from the show, the C's, the cunts, walk out. They're walking by. And I have to slump down with the Chipwich and big black eye on my face because I didn't want them to see me. And they didn't. But, you know, that whole night I was thinking, well, was this someone from the show? You know, like, 'cause it was so bad But then I kind of dropped that theory and figured this was someone, this was like some kind of gang initiation or something, like the frailest looking white guy you can find in the face. And you're in the big boys club now. I don't know.
Yeah. What gang do you think that would have been?
I think it was the Boy Scouts.
That you would have been. Yeah, exactly.
At the punch.
What gang was that? The police?
No, I actually found the gang that beat up Josh. The name of them, they were called the T-Birds, actually.
Yeah. It was
the Pink Ladies.
Yeah. He got beat up by Knitsky.
I should always have that picture of me with a black eye at the ready, because it's like,
so how, so like, were you bleeding or?
No, but my face was just blown up and swelled up so ridiculously. If I don't find the picture now, I'll have to send it to you guys. It's fucking crazy.
So what,
this happened in Times Square, and I think the stuff that's going on right now, a lot of it is happening in Times Square. It's funny because Times Square is, there's so many people that you'd think it'd be safe, but it seems like this happens there a lot. It's just odd.
But when that happened, was Times Square?
No,
was it safe yet, or it wasn't as bad as it was?
It was totally. Everyone was like, "It's de-Disneyfied. It's too sanitized."
Yeah, I mean, it was.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, but it's happening now. I just want to read a statement from the NYPD, just quickly. They put this on Twitter or X, whatever it is. The NYPD is aware of a viral video of circulating on social media depicting a woman who was randomly assaulted in an unprovoked attack. This individual has been arrested and charged. And it goes on to say, basically, this was his third arrest in the last 6 months. I think they're trying to say that, I guess, these people aren't staying in jail. I don't know, but.
Right. Well, I mean, the guy who just killed that cop was like, he was arrested 2,000 times. So.
Really?
Yeah.
2,000?
I'm sorry, two dozen.
Yeah, I was like, 2,000. Wow.
Shit, did I say 2,000?
He was arrested every 3 hours. So did that? What? Did that give you trauma? Like, what was the effect of that? Like, no. And seriously, like,
no, it actually didn't. It didn't make me like scared to walk around New York. Like, I'd be more scared today to walk around. And as I am in LA, I'm very cautious, but no, it didn't.
You would have been better if you instead of a chip wish, it was.
Yeah, so this happens to me once a year, though. Right?
Oh, right. And so when you had.
No, but if instead of it was a chip wish, you had a Klondike bar, because then that would have been a great Klondike bar commercial. What would you do for a Klondike bar?
Yeah. Get punched in the face by.
I have a terrible set. It's also a bad name. And get punched.
Yeah, Anyway, that guy has his own podcast now, and right. Is huge. He's doing
that
amazing.
Man's name is Dave Rubin.
Ooh, it's yeah. But when I do see that, like I saw that thing about women getting punched in the face. It's just so sad. It's just so sad that you would, like, the most vulnerable people, just people not paying attention and sucker punching them, especially women. I mean, I qualify as a woman
yeah.
in this case too.
And so I'm assuming everyone, you had a mark, so, and you were doing shows. So was everyone asking you about that for just like weeks?
Yeah.
And did
yeah.
you get annoyed? Cause I, like I said, I remember, I think someone, I was near you and someone asked you and you were like, I'm not telling this anymore. And then, you know, it's funny. It was that thing where you're like, I'm not telling you anymore. And then you're like, okay, fine. This is what happened. You told the story.
I mean, it's a good story. I had already shaped it into a decent story, but yeah, I guess I was sick of it at a certain point.
No, that would be where did you grow up?
South Jersey.
And when you first moved to New York, did you move to New York to do comedy or for something else?
Stand up.
And when you moved there, New York was still kind of dangerous, right? Like in the 90s.
You know, it's funny. This guy, I was doing comedy first. I started out the Stress Factory in New Jersey. And I remember this guy saying, you don't want to go to the Lower East Side. This is like late 90s. You don't want to go to the Lower East. There's a place to surf reality, man, but you do not want to go there. It's in the Lower East Side. It's really rough. And, you know, that's the first place I did surf
reality
a bunch, you know, forever. And, It wasn't that seedy. It wasn't so bad. It didn't become like, it wasn't what it became, like, you know, bridge and tunnel.
Right, areas. Right. But I grew up, me and Eric both grew up in the city, and I grew up in Manhattan, and it was just like, that's why when I hear people you know, you hear, you know, you read reports on the news and they're like, crime, subway crime is out of control and crime is out of control. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is fucking nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just every, literally, I do remember every day it was just kind of like, you expected something to happen. You expected someone was going to try to assault you, or you were going to see something bad every, almost every time you went somewhere. So, it's just amazing now when I hear when they're like, can you believe someone got punched? And I'm like, yeah.
But do you still feel like these days, do you feel, are you a little more cautious walking down the street than you were?
You know what? I'm sure things are, have gotten worse here, but the time when I did feel like things were getting worse was when I was gone for the very beginning of the pandemic and I moved back in like July of 2020. And when, everything was kind of closed and they had a like where everything closed at 10. I do remember being out past like 10 or 11 o'clock a few times. And I was like, oh, this feels bad. Like, cause no one was out and you could just tell people were out taking advantage. That was the first time in a while I felt like unsafe, but I don't know. I take the train all the time. One thing I have noticed, it's really weird. I guess this is indicative of something. Almost every time I take the train now, I see someone hop the turnstile almost every single time.
Well, I was starting to see that too.
No, I mean, that's been going on for a while. Post-pandemic, it's been going on because it happened during the pandemic. They're cracking down on it now, so we'll see what happens. But there's another thing. I live,
but like regular people, like it's like just like a normal dude. Right. Like, what are you doing?
But this is why I don't know. It leads into the other big story of the week is this congestion pricing that's going to go into effect soon in New York City. They're one of the reasons.
This is what the fans are tuning in for.
Yeah, but that is why, because their MTA is like losing a lot of money, probably because a lot of that stuff. And did you read about the congestion pricing that's going to go in?
No, I didn't. I mean, I've heard about that talk for a while.
Right. So it's going to probably go in June. You drive into the city below. If you come in below 60th Street, you're going to pay an extra $15. This is above and beyond the toll. The Jersey's going crazy because they're already paying $15 to go over the bridge. So it's $30.
Yeah, no, New York's very reasonable though. There's going to be another one too. If you walk out of your apartment, it's $20.
My God.
But you know, one thing I was going to say, the thing I'm
more scared. You might as well turn homeless so you don't have to pay. Right?
But I'm actually more scared of bicyclists than I am of people, because they're the real terror in New York City. These bicyclists, the delivery ones, even just they go the wrong way. They ignore lights. I know several comedians that have gotten hit by bicycles.
Yeah.
You know? And so now when you cross the street, even if you have the light, you still look because you're like, these people, they don't give a fuck.
Do you? So this is a good segue. So so do you still follow comedy? Like, I know you said, we were talking before, that you're not really doing a lot of stand up, Josh. I mean, so like, are you still, do you still follow it or what?
I mean, yeah, I follow it, but like, I'm not like as in touch as, you know, if I were doing it every night.
But do you like seek out specials?
What's that?
Do you seek out like new specials and stuff?
You know, I never watched as much stand up after the first few years as I did when I first started. But I've started to watch some more specials. I watched like Mark Norman's. I just watched David Tell's last night.
I just watched it last night too. And that reminded me of the joke he said where he's like, I was hit by a bike the other day and no, it was my fault. I was on the sidewalk.
Yes. Yeah. That was a great one. Yeah, he's beautiful.
So what
it's really fun.
I don't really seek out specials anymore. What I started doing is I would just go back to old specials that I really like comedians that I really like back in the day, and I would just kind of rewatch those. But you know, we've talked about this, how everything's changed, you know, with the internet and Instagram and Reels, and so now it's all kind of like compounded and shrunk into these like 1 minute bites of comedy, and like if you scroll, it's just literally everyone is a comedian. It's like insane. There's so much because anyone can put out a special now. So I kind of stumbled. I saw on Netflix the David Tell special was out, and I mean, probably like most people around when we started, David Tell at first was like my favorite comedian because you know. He was just pure, you know, David Tell is just like every line is a joke. That's what's so like amazing about him. But
and he was you know, every few years new comics always ripping off comics when they first start. He was the most ripped off when we were starting.
Yeah.
Then years later it was like Louis C.K., then Bill Burr. Now I see people comics doing Mark Norman, which is hilarious.
Like, but I hadn't really seen David Hill in a while, and I was like, oh, he has a special. I was like, I don't know. And I started watching it, and I was like, oh yeah, this guy's like amazing. How there's no way this guy would put out a bad special. So it was the first special I had watched in a long time that I watched all the way through. And I was like, and it was weird too, because it was all just jokes. There was nothing.
Yeah.
There's no political thing about it. There was no like it didn't feel cult. Like, you know, a lot of people you watch and it's like, they're almost like cults. Like people, they have their built-in audience, and it's almost like they're speaking specifically to their built-in audience. I love Dave Chappelle, but I feel like that's kind of what he's becoming, is like people go specifically, but David Hill's just like a comedian in the old sense of like, these are jokes. Anyone's going to get them. They're for anybody.
Right. But that's also like what some, and this is, it's an unfair knock, but why he never got to the level of Chappelle or Louis C.K. The knock on him was he's not personal. You know, he's not sharing. And like, you, Norm Macdonald wasn't personal. Why do you if you want to be personal, that's fine. But can't,
so
you just want to be a joke teller? That's great.
Also, you know? He may not be like tells, you know, stories about his life, but and who gives it? Personally, I don't give a shit. I want him to do what he does best. But shit, I lost my train.
He has a distinct style.
He certainly does. But okay, so it's not like he tells you his stories, but like you get a sense of him, even if it's just a caricature.
No, you know exactly who he is. Like, everything about him. About,
you know, it's like I always felt like, because I do, you know, I was always one liner too. Like I think I was a little all over the map, but he has a specific thing that they all work together.
Right.
You know, they all work together. He can tell absurd jokes. He can tell crude jokes. Racy jokes,
but I think that's what
kind of racist jokes or homophobic jokes that are so quick and silly that there's no time or reason to be offended.
And another thing that was always weird about him, that actually you would think he seems like someone that should be a lot more mean spirited for some reason, like, but he's not. But for some reason, like, you know, he could be dirty and tell kind of inappropriate like misdirects. But there's nothing mean-spirited about him. So I think like that was another, he was oddly silly, but that whole thing of not being personal, I think almost works more now.
Right.
Because it's like, I don't want to hear your fucking like this and this. It's like,
and I think hopefully maybe we can return to that a little bit, because I see so many young comics now, these Gen Z comics, every comic now is trying to find something personal about their lives, like something bad. And some of them live very sheltered lives, and they're really pulling shit out of their ass. Like you'll see a comic.
Right.
I'll be honest with you. Really hard for me to say. I suffer from low blood sugar or whatever, you know. Right. I'm like, dude, this is not an ailment. This is not you getting raped as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, you had you're a trust fund kid. You're making up things now. I've seen comics talk about that suffering from dyslexia, like it's like they have cancer or something like that. Yeah. I mean,
well, I think there's something's happened in comedy where it's been so like it has to be elevated or something. Everyone thinks it has to be like not just jokes and being funny. It's like it has to be like, yeah, through line of this, and you have to have a very specific point of view, and it has to come clear. So it was that's why it was funny. Like I said, I don't seek out specials, and a lot of times I'll try them for like 5 minutes and I'm like, I'm done. I'll just be like, this just isn't for, I just don't like it. So it's funny to like, when I was watching, it was like coming full circle. Like when I first saw Dave Attell before I did comedy, and I was like, wow, this guy's just telling, there's just jokes. Everything is a joke. So then like, this was like, wow, he did 30 minutes of just jokes. And like, that's comedy. I don't know. Maybe comedy should just be simple, where it's like, I want to laugh for 30 minutes and then I don't think about it again.
Well, I mean, I've always felt like, hey, if you can make it personal and authentic, great. I was never able to. I'm not a storyteller. So I did short jokes. My longest jokes was like 2 minutes, you know? But I always felt like in doing one-liners and jokes that weren't really true, you know, like just maybe the sentiment was there. But like I always felt like, especially when, you know, everyone was being more authentic or alternative, kind of just talking with their notebook. And, you know, I always felt like I had a harder time breaking through to the audience because the audience has been now trained so much to know the person up there rather than be like, here, me, this guy who looks like maybe I could be your accountant. I don't know. you know, doing one liners that are kind of absurdist that may seem more natural coming out of like, I don't know, a Stephen Wright type or a, I don't know.
Yeah. But also like this weird thing of like every comedian is supposed to be the exact same type of comedian, you know, which is such an insane, ridiculous prospect. Like, you're creative and you have a viewpoint. You need to put it into this context for us. And it's like,
I mean, that's what they want you to do with, you know, shows, you know, movies. They want to hear how it personally relates to you. And that's the advice we always got from Starla at the comic.
Right. Exactly.
Right. There's not enough about you in there. Yeah. Well, there's nothing fucking interesting about me.
Also, I had 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want me to tell? I can't even tell that punch story.
That was the comic. I actually want to relay a quick story. I tell people about how great Dave Attell is as a comic. This was a few years ago. He showed up to the comic strip and he hadn't been there in years. Right. We were all on the show and the show sucked, but there were 5 people that were really into the show, but all the comics and I still make this mistake. You're trying to get the people not laughing to laugh when you should be just getting the people who are laughing to laugh harder, then make it contagious. It's contagious. And he's so smart. No one was doing that. And he gets on stage and he just points to those 5 people. He goes, well, you guys are the only ones who care about this. So I'm looking at you and I'm performing for you. Nice. He does that. They are laughing hard. And then by the end of his set, everyone's laughing because he got those people to laugh so hard. And I always tell that story to people because you always focus on the people who are sitting in their front with their arms folded. I'm like, forget them. They're not into it. Get the ones who like you to laugh more. Maybe you'll get those. And if that person never laughs, who cares?
Yeah.
On a related note, I will also say something that bugs me is when people do it. Like, I understand it's always funny to like make observations about the situation or the environment. It's a shitty bar and there's a, you know, a light goes out. You know, you say something, you know, but when people go and just shit on the room and how shitty this is and how shitty the show is, it's like these people are here for it. Don't make them feel like idiots for being here.
I know. And sometimes
they'll think about the bar or whatever. But
right. Like, but sometimes they're like they'll shit on the show and it's because it's a free show. But I'm like, they might be paying money, but they're paying you with their time, you know, time. So, you know, and you, like you said, you shit on that. You look, well, oh, this show sucks, but you're on the show. So you suck, basically.
I will say I would do that sometimes, but I think you like there's a way to do it where it's fun. Like when I would do it, I would try to make it like funny. So it wasn't like I've seen people do it like earnestly, like mad. Like there's nothing worse than people who are like you can just feel people genuinely mad on stage. Yeah. Like that really doesn't go over well. It's one thing if you're kind of making fun of it and it's kind of in good fun a little bit and you're kind of, it's not even shitting. Place is shit. You are all shit.
But you know, you have so many other choices that are better. You don't even have to leave your home.
Yeah. No. Every time I go to a comedy show,
all these jokes are online. People.
Yeah. But, every time I go to a comedy show and there's people there, I'm like, what? Why? What are you doing here?
Right.
I don't done stand up in like I think it's been almost 2 months, and I had a moment where I was kind of like wow, I feel like I'm like sort of like kind of happier now. Like I'm not, believe me, I'm not happy. You know, I'm always like, you know, I find something to not be happy about, but you know, almost like, you know. Almost like sometimes you need a break from it because, you know, it is such a grind. I think people underestimate what a grind it really and what a toll it takes on you just night after night having to go up and you're at the kind of, you have to go in front of crowds of strangers and get their approval. And you're kind of being judged every night. It's rough, even if it's going well, you know, it's a grind for me. Really, I just started to notice it. When I got a little older, I was like, I don't know. It's just harder for me. So, well,
you know, that story that about Larry David, he always relays it when he used to be a stand up and he would just go on stage, look at the crowd and go, nope, and just not do it. And he did that a lot, apparently.
That's how I feel like a lot of times. But I got that way like in the last few years where what I just feel like I wouldn't get mad at the crowd, but I was just like, you guys are just, you're just dumb. Like, it's not me. Like, you guys don't, if you don't like it, you're wrong. This is not. So sometimes it was good. And this is one that I don't know how to relay this. The problem I'm having with, you know, the overabundance of comedy and all these reels is there's like, it's, I think it goes to the everyone trying to be personal, and there's like an over earnestness in comedy now. Do you know what I mean? Where everyone's
at the cost of being funny. Yeah.
Right. But it's like the comedians I really liked were almost like they like Zach Galifianakis. I always like, he wasn't my favorite comedian, but I always loved him. But there was something about Zach Galifianakis. He was really funny, but in a way it almost seemed like he was making fun of being a stand up in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't just earnestly like, hey, here's your, he was kind of telling it in a way that was like, this is a dumb joke, and I'm aware it's a dumb joke because I'm sort of, and that's sort of how I feel like Dave Attell, even in a way, is like, these are all just misdirect kind of silly jokes. I'm not really like, and if it doesn't go well, it's like, I'm not that great. So what do you want? Go, you should leave because I'm really not that great. So, which is, but everyone else I watch and they tell these, they all try to get into story. What do you think? Like, what do you think kicked that off? I guess people would blame that on the alternative scene, but I mean, I don't know though.
But I think the storytelling, it's a hard thing to do in New York City because you're getting very short spots. So it's very hard to do. And I appreciate the people who can do it really well. And the way you do it really well is you have to have jokes throughout. Pop, pop, pop.
Yeah. I mean, and there are jokes in there still.
Right. And I point to one, like maybe with the OG of storytelling, comics is, you know, Ophira, you know, Ophira, she is really good at it, really good. And I'm like, some comics, she came from the moth. And I tell comics, they're like, I want to do that. I'm like, watch her, because she will go joke. So it's a long story, which is a big chance to take sometimes if you're taking a 10-minute spot. So you need to have jokes throughout. So it's basically the same thing. It's like a bunch of one-liners, but they fit into a story.
That's right. I still have a tough time doing that, even though I feel like I do have fun stories to tell, but I don't know. I just like hiding behind my jokes.
Me too. I'm the same way. Cause I even did shows that they were like, this is a storytelling show. And they're not like, it's, you know, it's supposed to be kind of comedy adjacent, but it's more just you're telling a story. And I would do it, and I would even do okay, but I just felt so out to sea. It just didn't feel like, it just wasn't me. That, like, I didn't want to go do that. So it's kind of like the reason I, you know, sought out being on stage and doing comedy is because I had a certain outlook that and the way I saw things is funny. Like, don't make me try to not be in my lane. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
So it's just like, do you want me to be awkward and just not really me? Cause me telling personal stories, that's not my personality, really, you know?
Yeah. And I just don't like, there's a lot of these theme shows that they have, like naked shows. You've probably heard of those, which I would, I don't even want to perform with my clothes on, but
I know. Tell me about it.
Right. So, but there's all these theme shows and I sometimes I get invited to them and I'm like, that doesn't sound like for me, you know? Right. Like, there's one show that this is a newer thing they're doing is these heckle shows where you go on and people heckle you.
A lot of women are doing it.
Yeah.
But the booker said, oh no, it's okay because the people who are heckling you are comics. And I'm like, no, that's way worse. That's way worse. So smart people who have notebooks, who are like, because most hecklers,
people like creative people.
Right. Most hecklers you deal with are stupid. They usually implode. I always tell comics, like, you want to destroy a heckler, let them talk. They'll ruin it for themselves.
Can I remind you of something, Josh? So did you have a bit once where it was like Hecklers Anonymous or something?
Yeah. Actually, I did that in that 1:50 and 50 or whatever the hell.
Minute. What was it?
Actually, yeah, Eric probably even recorded something for it. I just was like, every comic had 1 minute to do whatever. It wasn't like, you don't do stand up. You just do whatever bit you could think of, something creative. So I did,
It was a Luna Lounge thing.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. And then I did it again at like, they had it at that theater. Shit. I can't remember the name of it.
They never invited me to that thing.
It's near Union Square. Yeah. That theater. Anyway. I was like, hi, my name is Josh and, I'm a heckler. And then you would just hear these voices that I pre-record be like, fuck you, you suck, go home, you know? And I just tried through it as more and more hecklers from Hecklers Anonymous were. I always wanted to make a video of that. It could be fun, but.
I think I saw it on a video, actually.
Okay. But I actually want to get to another thing also. There's certain words now that are, people are getting really triggered about, and you put a video about it or whatever. Suicide's a big thing now. If you put a video about suicide up, YouTube will immediately put up something. If you put it on TikTok and you make a suicide joke, it probably won't go through the algorithm. And it's a real thing. And now I know reading that sometimes that word now you can't even say. You have to say, like, this person ended their life.
Like, what, on stage?
Yeah, on stage. And
then, maybe the C words too.
But I remember.
I've seen friends like, you know, people, and these aren't people that stole my material, but I've just seen it absorbed.
Right. And I see it a lot now too, with me, especially with younger comics. I usually give it a pass because I remember when I first started, every comic would be accusing me of stealing a joke, and it would just not even be stolen. I'd be like, comic would go, oh, I have a joke about cars. You have a joke about cars. I'm like, yeah, you can have two different jokes about cars.
They're like, yeah. I stand up.
I know. Right. I know. Young comics are the ones that are really like dumb, and they think everything is either stolen or
original. And there's also a lot of parallel thought. I really think the stolen thing, you're going to accuse someone of stealing a joke, it's got to be not even a one liner. It's got to be a bit. You know,
I've had that done, and it's killed me.
That's why Carlos Mencia
did it on television. I was just like, shit, this is one of my best jokes. I can't do it anymore. And sometimes I've come up with a joke and then I hear someone do a similar joke that's too similar. And it's like Sarah Silverman. And I'm like, I can't do
that. No, I've had that. I've had that actually happen to me with Dimitri Martin like four times.
Really? Because
he didn't.
But the same thing happened to me with a few of my best jokes,
which I could, you know, and he wasn't stealing though. I wasn't like, oh, it definitely was parallel thing. I thought it was a good sign. Cause I was like, okay, if I'm kind of coming up things like that are like what Dimitri Martin is coming up with, then that's probably pretty good. There have been three times in my life where I'm kind of like, maybe absorbed is the right way to say it, but these are people that had access to the things I said. And one of them ended up in a movie. It was like in a movie, and it was, I had given it, as you know, probably this kind of a funny story.
Did you write the aristocrats joke? Yeah. That was yours. And then
No. You know, Dune 2, you know, the movie Dune 2.
Oh yeah. Which joke?
Just kind of the whole overarching theme of it was kind of one of my bets. No, I had a connection. I knew someone who was like friends with Paul Rudd, like my brother-in-law, like knew Paul Rudd. And so I gave him like a script I wrote. And then it had this scene where that had like a bit in it. And then like 2 years later, a movie came out, Role Models. And that was like in that movie, that kind of like interaction, very similar. And he definitely had access to the thing. But again, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I mean, I guess it could be, but it was, that's kind of a big coincidence.
But what can you do? So, cause I had some video that I posted.
Just tell everyone on podcasts.
I had a video that I posted online, and then people started telling me that I stole this from this famous comic. Mm-hmm. So I did some research, and the comic, I had written this joke 15 years ago. I was doing it 15 years ago. Cause I don't really write new material ever. No, but, And this comic had just started breaking it out a few years ago. But what? How can I? There's nothing I can do there. You know.
Wait, can I ask you a question? So when can you get away? How close does it have to be, do you think? Like, are there situations where it can be like similar, but there are definite differences
It's case by case, right? Like, I mean.
Because I've had a couple of times where recently that happened, and I was like, "Can I still tell this joke?" Even though I don't really even do stand-up, but I don't know. There was one with Mitch Hedberg. I wrote a joke, and people were like, "Mitch Hedberg has a joke like that," and it was like not that close. The joke was like, whenever mine was like, when, you know, I was like, I have mice. And I was like, how come whenever your apartment gets infested, it's always with shitty animals, you know? Like, you never come home and you're like, you know, honey, we have pandas.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
And he has something about, yeah, like,
I remember he does have something similar.
Like, koala. I have koala bears in my living in my kitchen. You know, it's the cutest infestation ever. You know, or something like. I mean, it's pretty similar.
Too close. I think it's
It's pretty similar.
Yeah, I had a joke. But, I had a joke where someone said it was a Hedberg joke. I just dropped it. I was like, "Fuck," you know, because he.
Well, that's also the problem I found as like a short joke, right? You know, short jokes is that, and they're not personal. Is that it's way easier to come up with a parallel thinking. You're going to get dinged so many times because you're working. It's not coming from you. It's not like a long story that has very specific, a lot of specifics in it. You know, it's just like, how can I do a sentence trick? You know, so you're kind of, especially if it's wordplay. Like when I was active on Twitter, like I think of a pun because I don't mind puns, or wordplay joke, off a topical thing. And I do a search and like 100 people had already done it. Like, so I feel like with one liners, if you're not making it personal, you're playing in the same area.
Yeah. I've even written jokes where I'm like, someone's going to come up with this at some point.
Too easy. It's like, so like what you said at Twitter, you would tweet something out and it just came too easy. And then a million other people with the same tweet. And
but it's like, weird. The best jokes come out so easy. And it's like, you always think like, okay, well, if it came out that easy, this isn't my joke. It can't be. But some of them are, and they're the best ones. The ones that just spill out of you.
But that's why it's weird when you like watching Dave Attell. I haven't watched him in a while. Watching him was like, I hadn't had that feeling in a while. He's full of jokes where you're like, why didn't I come up with that joke?
Oh, yeah.
But like,
I
was just the one about I got hit by a bike. It was my fault. I was on the side. It was just like, how did I not write that joke? It's so right there for the picking. But it's weird. It's a thing where the really great comedians, that's what they do so well, is they do take the things that are just like kind of hanging out there, but they think of the easiest, most economical way to tell, you know what I mean? Yeah, that no one's thought of.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Cause in that case, I was trying to put together a bicycle joke that was similar to what his was. I couldn't get it to work because I wasn't thinking like him. I'm like, he found the best way to do it and I couldn't get it to work.
You guys do this like I still think of jokes and I write them down because it's just like naturally, if I'm like, okay, I'm going to write, and I just start writing stand up. When I watch specials, like when I was watching Dave Attell, and like, I'm not doing stand up these days, but I'm always thinking about going back. I almost write while I'm watching stand up specials, which you think lifting their jokes by unintentionally, but that's not really what happens. And I did this always also when I'm watching other comics. It's like, there's a part of me is like, I should be up there, and just the wheels start turning like that. Like, for some reason, that just, you know.
No, it is. It just kind of, I don't know what it is. It kind of like, it's like a muscle getting like flexed or something. It's kind of like something that's been dormant. And no, I used to do that a lot too. And it's weird because it does seem like you're like, you're not stealing. It's just kind of like inspiring your brain to start seeing things.
It is.
It happens to me all the time. I don't know if it happens to you. I'll watch certain comedians that I really like and I start writing almost in their voice in a way. Sure. That happens all the time. That's weird.
This happens to me a lot. I'll see a comedian do a joke about on a certain subject, and I'm like, oh yeah, I used to have a joke on that subject.
Oh, dude, I know.
But that's okay. I mean, it's not the same joke, but I'm like, it just reminds me that I should do that joke again.
But there's probably tons of jokes that some jokes just stop working with no explanation and they never work again. I don't know what that phenomenon is. It must be something in the delivery that you're so bored with it. I don't know, but, I don't know where I was going, but,
I think I talked about it maybe with you before that. I've had so many jokes where I'm like, this joke is unbelievable. And every time I tell it, like, you know, it's happened with different jokes, just doesn't do well. And I'm like, what? Like, that's like the weirdest phenomenon to me, is a joke that I'm like, this is so good. and no one likes it except me. And then the, you know, and then there's a lot of times jokes that I, one of my biggest jokes that got the biggest reactions ever, consistently, I just was always like, yeah, I guess that's funny, but I didn't particularly think it was funny when I thought of it, or
yeah,
I didn't really love telling it, but it just killed. And it was like a weird.
Yeah, I know. It's.
And then I got to a point later where I almost was like, not trying to piss off the audience, but I was almost like, you know, those sets you have where you're like, you feel like you're telling stupid jokes and they're killing. You're just like, it almost makes you hate the crowd. You're just like, you idiots. That's, I kind of started to get more like,
you don't
that.
Do any, you don't do material that you absolutely hate. You're just like, well, I didn't think this was as good as.
I don't think, like, you know, like, you'll be doing a crowd, you can tell some stuff's not working. So you're like, well, let me go into this simpler stuff. And right. then that simpler stuff kills. And you're like, that's the one. You know what I mean? Something
I gotta say, even talking about the miseries of stand up makes me want to do it again.
Well, I've been doing something that actually I've been writing more on stage, because I noticed that if you come up with something on stage, you have the instant reaction. Sometimes I'll write a joke at home. I'm like, this is going to kill. And then you do it and it doesn't work. So right, I've have a lot of material that I've written on stage. It's just coming. It's from ad libbing and stuff, but you know it works because you literally heard it.
I mean, if you have enough stage,
can you think of it like how many times do you think it's happened to you where you've a joke has come into your head basically almost fully formed, and you immediately were like, oh yeah, this is like a really good joke, and then you did do it and it just immediately killed. How many times can you remember that happening? I mean, like a lot.
It's definitely happened. I'd have to look through my jokes, but I feel like it's happened. You know,
there's one that I can think of specifically, but what, go ahead. Like the one time I can remember it specifically, it was really weird. And it was like, I'd been going through writer's block for like 2 weeks. Cause you know, I don't know. Remember like that time where you were just, like, I was so immersed in stand-up for like a certain amount of years where it was just on my mind 24/7.
Our lives. Absolutely.
It was my life. And so, and your mind just gets, it's like a drug. It's all you're trying to do. And so I had 2 weeks of not writing a joke that I thought was good. And I was like, fuck. And it was really like getting to me. And then one day, just out of nowhere, this joke literally just came in, and it was the joke.
You're like,
I did
why
about.
Did this, why did the chicken cross the road? You're like,
no, I was like, who's going to build that wall to Mexico? It's going to be the Mexicans. Remember how everyone was fighting over who wrote that? Like Carlos Mencia. No, it was just the one I had, and it became one of my big, and I did it once and it killed, and everyone was like, I love that. It was the one about when people say this might be the alcohol talking, and then they say something dumb. And then I was like, you never hear that with other drugs. Like, this might be the crack talking, but I really feel like robbing a liquor store.
That's a classic. That would,
yeah. And it's, I was like, and I do remember when I thought, what?
Go ahead.
I was just like, oh my God. I was like, that's such a, I was like, this is like a home run joke. Yeah. And then, I did it just like immediately kill. And like, that's so rare. It's so rare that was one of the only times I can remember that happening. Cause a lot of times I'll think of something and be like, this is a home run, and then no one likes it, or it takes a while to get good. You know, that's another thing.
Yeah. But I think when you're an experienced comic or a good joke writer, you do will fall into those jokes. Sometimes you're like, this has got to work. This has got to work. You just know joke structure. And you know, that's why if it doesn't work, you're like, I must be telling this wrong in a way, because this is, the concept is so funny.
I immediately go to, they're not hearing it right.
Right. I'll go, they probably don't speak English. That's probably, you know.
I feel like I've had a lot of jokes that have worked like that, and some that I've wrestled with for a long time and got right, and some that I still wrestle with if I were.
Yeah. So I mean, there's so many jokes where you could just change. And I'm getting better at it, but I see good comics do this where you just fix one word of the joke and it makes it so much better, you know? And
you know, yeah. One word can make a difference, or an omission of a couple words.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really weird too. Cause you know, being separated from you do, it's easy to get out of practice. And I, you know, watching it definitely can help be beneficial, like watching a lot. Cause yeah, I mean, early on, I just watched comedy. I just took in so much comedy, you know, it was almost like, part of a job or something. That's all I watched was was good stand-up. So that's why it's weird. It's hard for me. I don't really like watching comedy, whereas that was kind of a bad sign. And like I said, it's just become too... Like, when I started comedy, it wasn't like a popular thing, really.
No, I know. When we started, it was still... I always think of it as like, it was still people who thought, I'm different. I have to do this. I have to do this. There's nothing else coming to me.
It was a have to do. Like, that was the only reason I started doing it. I tried so long to not do stand-up because it terrified me. I mean, it still terrifies me. I didn't want to get up there.
I know. So, and now with comedy, like, all the big people who are crushing it are like hot people, which was never a thing before.
Right.
You know, it's like I was...
Well, that's,
you
know, what, like, I had in common. You know, that was my...
But, you know, like... You know, like, I'm Matt Rife, who's, and it's like, you know, you see him on stage and he's got his, you know, his muscles are out and stuff. And I was always thinking, like, back in the day, you're like, I want to be a comic, you know, where should I work out? I'm like, oh, go to open mics and stuff. Now it's like, I want to be a comic. Where should you work out? You know, Planet Fitness.
Yeah.
That's their working out now. They're actually
also like, when I see that, part of me is like, dude, just go fuck chicks. Like, what are you doing this for? Like, a lot of people went into it to bang chicks. Like, just go outside.
I did. Yeah. It didn't work, but I did. I mean, I went into it. I loved it, but I thought that was eventually going to be the payoff. Part of that.
I mean,
there were so many comics that who were so funny, had no business getting laid, but they got laid because of comedy. Let that be for them, you know?
Yeah, look at Rodney's wife, you know?
Yeah.
He's no beauty.
Right. So, all right. Well,
we should wrap it up.
I want to show you. I got to find the picture of the black guy. Let's see.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Is that like right after?
Yeah, this is like the next day, I think. Look at that shit.
That's pretty bad.
Yes, I had to walk around with. It was punch was pretty hard.
Did he punch your nose?
No, it's just like my eye, like the side of my face.
Do you have any, so you just, do you remember the fist hitting you or you just remember falling?
I mean, I remember the impact.
What were you thinking? Like when you first were like, what were you like? You're like, wow, what, did something hit me? Like, something fall from the sky? Or?
No, I knew the guy hit me, I think. Maybe I didn't the first second, you know. I got up and I saw him running down, and then and these kids were telling me to go get him. And I felt like they were his audience, probably maybe knew it was going to happen.
What a weird crime, because there was no money or anything. It wasn't like a robbery.
I know. I always felt like I have a punchable face, though. I think
I thought it was.
That's even more insulting. Like, dude, this wasn't even for money. Just seeing me. Like,
how come that happened to you once and it never happened to Ted Cruz ever? Because you figure he's got a punchable face.
I've had a lot of crazy shit happen where. I don't know. I'm a nice guy, but
maybe it was a hit and he was a mistaken identity thing.
No, I think we thought at the time it was a gang initiation that they would do
that. That's what I think so too. I really do. I mean, he didn't look like a crazy guy.
He must have been like, you should have seen the guy I hit, man. Oh, he's fucking huge. he was enormous.
He was a big dude.
No, I'm talking about you, and he was describing you. He wanted to make himself sound tough to the gang.
He was telling the gang leaders.
He was 8 feet tall.
That guy could have crushed me. I mean, he could have. You saw where he hit. Like, he could have fucking cut my eye out. I think I got lucky in that sense.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, you were lucky, man.
I'm lucky.
All right, okay, we'll wrap it up. All right, thanks, Josh. Thanks for coming out. It's always great to talk to you.
It was fun. Thanks, guys.
And come back anytime.
Can I plug something?
Of course. Oh, yeah. We didn't get to your Smigel thing. Go ahead.
That's okay. I'll plug it so people can watch it. So I worked on something for Robert Smigel, that a live show at Sketchfest. I think you just look it up by... the whole thing's on YouTube. Type in Triumph Sketchfest. I don't know. The guests were Weird Al, the guy from Mythbusters, and Rob Schneider, who was a really good speaker about jokes.
Really? Because isn't he ultra like right wing now?
Yeah. So he was announced as a special guest, and he was a good sport. And actually, afterwards, he was very nice. And I wonder if he felt like, well, I'm in enemy territory, so I'm going to be a little gentle. But he was a good sport. You know, we did jokes about his, someone wrote, I don't know who wrote it, but it was a great joke. Triumph says, Rob, I know, thank you so much for making it after so close after the holidays. I know you'd like to spend January 6th with your family. I didn't write it. It was such a great joke.
Though. I love the, I'm a huge Eminem fan. So I, you know, I every now and then I go back and watch the Triumph and Eminem thing at the Video Music Awards. I miss the days when like those were like top news stories, like when Eminem like hit Triumph at the MTV VMAs. That was like a big story for like days.
No story lasts for days. Trump would like shit on I don't know.
Triumph should go like go after Trump. Like I wonder if there would ever be a situation he could like ambush Trump. He probably could never get close enough. Yeah, to. Do you guys go to, do you ever do that? Do they go to like MAGA things?
Dude, don't you remember we got arrested in 2018?
Oh yeah, in the Capitol, right?
Yeah, we got arrested. So I think maybe there'll be some political things, probably not with Colbert, in the future, but kind of had to lay low.
What did you say? Probably not with Colbert?
Well, because that's where we got arrested. You know, when we got arrested, it was for his show.
Oh.
And I think that didn't put them in a great
place. That right after January 6th?
No, no, no. It was like, it was during the hearings. It was during the,
the impeachment hearings?
Yeah, that's what we went down there for.
Oh.
No, not the impeachment hearings, the hearings on January 6th, with like Liz Cheney and.
Right.
Yeah. We went down to cover those, and that's when, we got
was it because you were annoying like some right wing sent was it like Marjorie Taylor Greene or something?
Well, we were annoying people? Her and I did get in a thing with her maybe his chief of staff where he was like we were in the very morning the first thing we did there was like an impromptu press conference with some of the January 6th wives of the you know insurrectionists slash hostages And this guy saw Robert and Robert was just doing like, you know, mouthing Triumph because he didn't want to interrupt their thing and get thrown out or whatever. So he's just, you know, he can put the voice in later. And he, this guy got, he's like, are you serious? What do you think you're doing? This is disgraceful. This woman is up here talking about her husband and blah, 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 you know, cause it was like Louis Gohmert. And so he was in Robert's face filming Robert. So I stepped in the middle of them. Like he had this camera right for Robert and the dog puppet. Acting like, you think you're getting away with this? So I stepped in and I still have the video and I stepped in and I just got between him and started filming him. And he just like turns his head away. Oh, wow. Looks, gets out of the camera's eye real quick.
Right. It's
really fun to see that little weasel. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene staff telling us, how do you live with yourself?
Yeah.
I mean,
right. This is Jewish.
Yelling at
a
comedian with a puppet in his hand.
Yeah.
You know, the thing
like
that,
that you're making a mockery of the government.
Yeah, we're trying to talk about this, the pain this January 6th wife is going through because her husband beat up 7 cops and tased.
Right. I love that hostages thing, too, how they're hostages now. Yeah. It's like I've never heard. My husband's a hostage. Oh, how did he get taken? Well, yeah. He beat up a police officer.
Yeah.
Then he went to court for 3 months.
Yeah, and, Israeli hostages are being like, you know, raped.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
guys are getting
the prison guards captured him and put him in a cell.
Yeah.
So, all right. Let's wrap it up.
Sorry.
No, that's I have okay. 5 more things to say.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Josh. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.